I'm Hafsa Abubakar Matazu, a senior program manager with Human Angle Foundation. On the 27th of April, Human Angle organized a dialogue on genderizing conflict reporting that addressed many important issues on reporting conflict while being female, especially in male-dominated fields such as journalism. The session examined women's safety in high-risk zones while recognizing the ability of women to bring unique perspectives to stories around conflict, particularly the ability to humanize the elements of war and migration, and to encourage women to take on hitherto male-dominated careers. This conversation was equally important because it highlighted the need for increased policies and restructuring of media organizations to promote better and safer environments for women conflict reporters to thrive. The panelists who spoke during the dialogues were Chika Odua.
When I became a journalist, which was, 18 years ago, I've been doing this for about 18 years, I never had it in mind to be a conflict reporter. I wanted to cover culture. And when I moved to Nigeria in 2012, Boko Haram's insurgency was really hitting hard in northeastern Nigeria. And I did not want to cover Boko Haram. I said that there's going to be enough journalists covering this thing. There's too much reporting on conflict already in Africa. So I really tried to avoid it as much as possible. But somehow the story kept knocking on my door, literally. My coverage, I don't like to call it conflict reporting. I like to refer to what I do as really covering the nuances of life in Africa. So it's more than conflict. It's also about love, life, happiness, hopes, sorrows, triumphs. And I try to capture the entire human experience.
She's one of the few journalists to cover the Boko Haram insurgency extensively since 2012, and the first known journalist to be embedded within the Nigerian army. Sally Hayden, who is a freelance Irish journalist specializing in reporting migration, development, and conflict issues.
Yeah, I think it's very important that there are women who are doing this reporting, because often when you have male reporters, I think they can overlook like the experiences of women in some of these situations. That's not to say all of them, but I think some of them can, and that particularly in conflict, it can kind of be seen as a very male thing. And obviously, like 50% of the population is women, and as women, I think we tend to have a more like broader view of, you know, what these stories are like and what they mean, and what are the human repercussions of these situations.
She is also the author of My Fourth Time We Drowned, a book which focuses on the Libya-Europe migration route and the complicity of the EU to human rights violations. Sally has travelled across the world's continents to tell the stories of conflict. Hawa Shafinuhu is Human Angle Media's managing editor. She covers the human cost of terrorism and insurgency in the country, especially in relation to displacement, migration, and transitional justice.
I just knew that I wanted to be a writer. I needed to write about the things that were around me. And it's why also oftentimes when I describe myself and I introduce myself, I start first with the word storyteller, because I think essentially at the core of it, I'm a storyteller. But also part of what it means to be a storyteller is to be influenced by the things that you see around your environment. Of course, the internal factors within you are also important, but sometimes there are things that are external that's happened around you in your environments that now go further to influence the kind of writing that you eventually do.
Chika Odua.
Thank you so much, Hafsa, and a very big thank you to Humangle for putting this forum together. It is so vital for us to have these conversations, and I'm very grateful and so humbled to be a part of it. I'm also very excited to see all of the people who have joined us. This is definitely not a small room. So thanks to all of the people who have taken their time out of their day to be part of this conversation.
So you were the only female journalist who basically briefly covered the Boko Haram insurgency when it started back in 2012, about 10 years ago in northeastern Nigeria. That's including the Chibok and the Dapchi Girl school abductions. So what would you say has been the most under-highlighted aspect of the insurgency? And what has it been like following a path where there weren't nearly enough models for you to follow, especially in this part of the world? What were some of the challenges you encountered?
There are certainly challenges, but I always like to focus on the opportunities. And so let me speak to the opportunities before I go to the challenges, if you don't mind. The opportunities I found was that people were very welcoming, number one. I entered a culture where people had their arms open and they were very grateful to see someone coming from Abuja, that's where I was based, to come to hear their stories. And I was immediately welcomed by communities in Adamawa, in Bauchi, in Gombe, in Yobe, in Borno State. I was immediately welcomed. And I will never forget this sense of being welcomed. They invited me to their homes, into their bedrooms, to break bread with them, to go to their schools, into their mosques, into their churches, to really see what was happening. They wanted their stories to be told. I didn't face the typical challenges that people may expect. Being a woman, for me, I always felt it was the exact opposite. People perhaps, number one, have less expectations of what a woman can do. Therefore, they're like, oh, what harm can she do? Just bring her in, number one. So, and number two, you know, being in northeastern Nigeria, which is a highly conservative society where men and women are often separate, I had access to spaces that my male colleagues don't have access to. And I always use that to my advantage. You know, so I could go into the bedrooms of children, of women, into women's spaces to do what I had to do. But in terms of challenges, I would say the biggest challenge is always trying to convey to the international world why these stories matter. So I'm constantly trying to dialogue with my editors to say, no, this is important. Do not take this line out. But oftentimes they want to lead the story with blood, and I want to lead with heart.
What do you know? So your work has largely focused on documenting the plight, particularly the injustices carried out on the female victims of the insurgency in the Northeast. I think we can all agree that women have actually majorly carried the largest brunt of any conflict, which I mentioned earlier. So in doing all this, how have you been able to connect with the subjects of the stories of the trauma you document? And how, and has it come at a cost having to connect with them on such a personal level?
As difficult as I thought it would be before I started, it turned out to be easier than I thought it would be. And that's in relation to your question about being able to connect with these people. Of course, having access is another thing entirely, but when you do eventually get the access, the way that I was able to work with these women and speak with them, I think it was just astounding, really, how easily they trusted me and how open they were to share their experiences. So my experience with working with vulnerable people, I think, is similar to that of Chika's. I have gone into very few places that I felt a certain kind of wall or restraint between me and the person that I was interviewing. In most cases, I found someone who was willing to talk, who very desperately wanted the world to know their story. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's a different thing entirely when the questions that I have are tricky, especially particularly with women who have had to live with insurgents, women who aren't like victims in the strict sense of the word, but women who perhaps have been combatants or who are core ideologist in this whole extremism thing. So with them, I think it was a bit difficult because I needed to convince them that I was not there with the judgment lens. I just truly wanted to understand what their life had been like. So with that, I think it's the only place where I found a certain kind of restraint. From the way that they looked at me, I could tell that they were trying to measure if they could trust me, if they could answer my questions as honestly as I needed them to, and all of that. But oftentimes, as things progress, I found the wall usually broke down, and I usually got responses to most of the questions that I posed to them. There was a woman in an IDP camp in Burma who hosted me once, and I remember we didn't even speak the same language. I speak Hausa, but she spoke Kanuri, and I don't speak Kanuri. So you can imagine how difficult it was to communicate with her. But that did not in any way impede the kind of access and warmth that she was able to give me. She cooked for me. She used the last money that she had to get some things to use to cook. She hosted me in her tent. And up till now, sometimes she video calls me using someone else's phone and we can't talk, but we just wave at each other and we laugh and we smile because we don't speak the same language. So the bulk of my experience really has been that of open hands. I've been with women who have just really been open to sharing their experiences with me. Perhaps it has been a bit difficult with men, but I'm also wondering if perhaps that is because a lot of the men I have interviewed, sometimes I interview them in the presence of other people. So it's possible that that could also be a factor, a contributing factor to why I haven't found the same amount of openness from men. But even that is in very few cases, but yeah, majorly I think it's been easy to get across to them. On how it has impacted me, what strikes me all the time about all of this is that it's not when you're speaking with people that, you know, it strikes you, wow, that's some messed up thing I just heard. It's usually during the writing process. That's when, as you're writing it and you're recalling and perhaps listening to the recordings or the footages that you made, that's when it begins to sink and you realize just how heavy all of these things that you're reporting are.
I'm going to direct this question to all three of you now. So have you ever felt much risk in the field covering conflicts and migration because of your gender? Would you mind sharing these experiences with us? Perhaps let me start with Hawa this time.
I think the one time where I felt like my gender might have worked against me was sometime last year in Yobe State. I had been documenting stories about the Buniyadi massacre that had happened nearly a decade ago. And I was basically hunting down parents of the boys who had died and looking for the boys who had survived. And I remember this particular man, I had spent nearly 3 hours with him, really, just trying to get my story. But I remember coming away from that conversation without any sense that I had been able to get anything of notes. And that was because it was difficult to have a clear and professional conversation with him about what, in fact, I had come there to do. He kept derailing the conversation and asking questions that I knew he would not have asked if the journalist were a man.
I would say the place where I am very conscious of my gender would be South Africa. So you hear me referring to South Africa as a place of conflict, but right now there's a conflict when it comes to recognizing women as people who need to be protected and be at liberty to operate freely. So femicide is a huge issue in South Africa. There's lots of cases of women being killed, sexual harassment. It's really at a fever pitch, which is why the president of South Africa declared a state of emergency in 2021 because of the number of cases of women being killed. So I would say that is a place of crisis. Where toxic masculinity is really at the point where it needs to have a national address. And that's what's happening in South Africa. So being in South Africa is always a place where I really experience visceral tension. And because I know anything could happen at any time.
In terms of feeling at risk, yeah, I would say like, I tend to be like of the attitude that you should use whatever, you know, advantages you have to do your reporting in the best kind of way that's unique to you. And so generally, like, I see being female as an advantage, like we were talking about earlier, that you can be underestimated. That can actually be really great when you're reporting. It makes you a bit safer that you're not seen as a threat. But I do think that threats to women are pretty much happen everywhere in the world. Like, I don't think that it's just something that happens in a conflict area. I've been in, you know, countries where someone will just suddenly become creepy and you're interviewing them about something really mundane and it's nothing to do with conflict at all. Scariest that I've had it was in France one time when we basically, I went into this kind of like a camp that was being run by a trafficker, and I was with a male photographer, and we had just kind of heard that there were like people staying in this camp that they were trying to get to the UK, and we went in and there was a man who we think was a trafficker or smuggler who basically threatened us, and he said, I think his threat was that he was going to kill the photographer and that he was going to rape me. And basically we obviously got out of there very quickly. And I do remember afterwards, I mean, I do think that he was using whatever he could to scare us, basically. And I do remember my editors after, like, freaking out a lot more about the threat towards me versus the threat to the photographer. And I was like, well, I think both are scary, you know, like, I kind of was very anxious that it would be used to stop me from reporting in the future. Like, they would see that as, like, a greater threat.
I think there's a lot of data that says there are less women in journalism and even few women doing conflicts reporting. So at the end of the day, what that means is that the body of works that are available on the internet, the research and all of that, that we have on experiences that are specific to women is so few. Like, you don't get, there are a lot of things that you would be researching online now and that are related to women, and the information that you would see would be so scanty. It would not even be enough to back up the work that you're trying to do. And that's because we haven't had a diverse enough set of people reporting on women-specific issues. For example, sometime last year, I was researching on unsafe abortion practices amongst displaced people in the northeast of Nigeria. And I needed to do some research to give context to and guide the things that I was finding from the field. So I checked online to see how rife is this in Nigeria, and then in Northern Nigeria, and then further narrowed down to Northeast Nigeria. And I remember the data that I got said that it had been pulled from merely accessing public health centers to know with how many women had come for abortions. So you see, that data would be so heavily flawed, because which woman in Nigeria would go to a public health center seeking to have an abortion? Like, the majority of these things that are done at home. Nobody, especially because it's illegal in the country. So I strongly believe one of the reasons the data and information I was able to get on that was so scanty was that we haven't had enough women in conflicts reporting doing the reporting that was required for this level of information to be accessible on the internet. So should women do more conflicts reporting? Absolutely. We need more women everywhere. We need more women in journalism, in conflict reporting, in parliaments, everywhere, really. We account for like half of the population. So it just makes sense that we account for half of the population everywhere else, not just in the world, but in high places and places that matter.
Yahuza Abukadu has this question. How were you able to navigate the challenges you mentioned that came from your editors?
Well, I'm still navigating. The struggle continues, literally. I think my editors kind of know me as someone who's a bit stubborn. Like, the story needs to be told with nuance. So they have kind of relented and say, just let her do her thing. She wants to keep these voices. I don't want to simplify the story at all. I think it's about having the boldness to have a back and forth conversation with your editor sometimes. Don't just give in so easily. So just really say no. Have confidence that you have a command of the story that they may not have. And just don't be afraid to show, I know the story actually better than you do, editor.
So I wanted to ask if there were like techniques that women need for conflict reporting, like any certain techniques needed. And also, if you are remote, if you can't travel to the conflict region, how best can you get sources? So those are my two questions.
Yeah, Yeah, sure. So with skills, I would say it's the same general skills that any journalist would need when reporting in a conflict zone. And there are many foundations and organizations that can actually give you this tactical training. So tactical training is very important. And if you take a tactical hostile environment training, you're going to learn things like first safety, you know, what to do in terms of a medical emergency. You're also going to learn like how to deal with mines in the ground or those kinds of threats. Or you also need to have an understanding of weaponry. So you need to have a basic level of like just basic what to do and how to mitigate certain risk. So first thing you need to know is about risk and what kind of risk that, you know, certain places are more prone to, whether it's the risk of kidnapping, whether it's the risk of like coming into contact with communicable diseases, like the water may not be clean. So you just have to know how to mitigate risk. That's the basic thing. Then I would also say just get some training, tactical training that's available for journalists. And then your other question about sources, if you can't actually get to the conflict zone, rely on fixers. This is where you really have to get fixers to become your best friends. And so with those fixers, I like to try to set up phone calls with the person I'm trying to talk to so I can actually hear their voice. You try to hear the emotion in their voice. If you can do like a visual call, that's even better. So just as much as you can see from the person, I try as much as possible to go to the place, to be honest. If you can do that, just go. But I understand that there are definitely barriers. So just try to get a visual call set up with them or a voice call.
My first question will be directed at Awa. So Awa shared a story of how she tried to get a story from a man, and for like almost 3 hours, she didn't get anything. So how do you undo situations like that, especially with the opposite sex and you being a female trying to get information, trying to get a story or trying to get an angle, and they're kind of not treating you right? So how do you undo it? Because this is something that I have observed, especially from the male folks. And secondly, my second question is, what are some of the ethical issues that can come up when you're doing conflict reporting? Thank you.
Thanks for your question, Victoria. I think in that instance, the thing about situations like that is you're not immediately sure what exactly is happening, right? So sometimes you have to first establish that you're not the one who's reading meanings into things. So I think for the first hour or so of that conversation, that's basically what I was trying to do, trying to make sure that I wasn't the one who was asking the wrong questions and, you know, sort of derailing the conversation. But eventually it became clear that, you know, I wasn't the problem. Yeah, so, and when it did, I kept trying, to be honest. I tried for quite a while, but when it became clear that I wasn't really going to get as much information as I had gone there to get, I just wrapped it up, really. And then, but luckily for me, I had like a lot of sources lined up to interview during that time. So that one failure did not seem like something really major. So yeah, a lot of the other sources that I had lined up made up for that. So far, that's the only experience like that I have had in the course of my professional work, of course. And I would just say, if it does happen to you, I hope it doesn't, but if it does, I think you just have to prioritize your own self and your well-being. So the moment you realize, oh, you don't like the course of this conversation, just end it and remove yourself from it and really just keep going. There's nothing more important than your health. And by health, I mean even mental health.
This dialogue series is the first of many Human Angle Foundation will hold in the future to address gender, sociopolitical issues, and intersection between climate change and conflict, and how it affects people's livelihoods, especially women in Africa. Conversations like these are important in addressing stereotypes and barriers that widen inequalities in our society. Follow Human Angle and support our work in improving human values and social cohesion.